He said the Israelis are extraordinarily dependent upon the United States for armaments, and that the Israelis must keep a parity with the Russians, and that this parity costs $4 billion a year. Now, of that $4 million, they think they can count on the United States to supply $2.5 billion worth of armaments, and that the Israelis must buy $1.5 million worth. And this means that the Israelis have very few resources for their own social needs, including such basics as education and hospital care and absorption of the immigrants, and therefore they depend upon the Jewish community in the United States. His comment about parity was fascinating, because the parity that the Israelis must keep with the Arabs is one Israeli airplane for each three Arab airplanes and one Israeli tank for each three Arab tanks. And this is parity only because of the quality of the Israeli soldier. And it is in order to maintain the quality of the population that the Jews in America must contribute, because without quality education and without quality tools to aid in this education, the Israelis would not be able to be the superior persons they are, so that their inferiority in equipment is not lethal to the survival of the Israelis. Judy just came down to talk to me to say hi. So I'm going to interrupt my conversation with you for a little while so I can say hi to Judy. After the Israeli ambassador finished his speech, it came to be time for the calling of the cards. Mr. Zuckerman gave a rather impassioned speech about the need for American Jewry to support Israel. Well, the contributions that were given at that dinner were absolutely amazing and incredible. The contributions ranged from a low of $75,000 to a high of, I think, $1,250,000. Well, naturally, our firm was at the low point, and we were sort of awestricken, Calvin Eisenberg and I, about the high point people. The dinner brought $7,700,000 of contributions, compared to the same people having given $6,300,000 in 1973. But the amazing part about it is that a great portion of the 1970, I got my years wrong. These are pledges for 75, and the 6,000,003 was for 74. The amazing thing is that the 6,000,003, a good part of that 6,000,003, was composed of one-time gifts made because of the Yom Kippur War. Now, these one-time gifts have ceased to be in the category of one-time gifts, because the makers of these one-time gifts have not only continued these gifts, but in many cases have increased the gifts. All in all, it was an extremely moving evening, and I felt rather honored to have been invited. It was somewhat of a fluke, and obviously we were much out of our league in being with such large donors. After the dinner, Leonard Sherman and Cal Eisenberg and a couple of other Chicagoans who were at the dinner, including a Dr. Milt Ratner and a fellow by the name of Sal Epstein, went back to the Washington Hilton, and we had a little drink, and then called it a night, and then I did a little bit of business in Washington on Tuesday morning, and took the airplane to Toronto to meet Mommy and Judy. I'll sign off for now. I wanted to make sure to be able to tell you about my experience at the Israeli ambassador's house. I just heard your tape just a few minutes ago, your sixth tape, by the way, the one about your weekend in the north, and meeting David at the discotheque, and you're skinny dipping, and it was very, very interesting. It is now 2 days later, and yesterday we had a new contingent arrive. It was Uncle Costa, Lauren Bob, and Carol. And who else? Who was the fifth one?
Yargo,
yeah. We had a lot of fun last night. We went to a good restaurant in Ontario, which is sort of an unheard of thing. It was a Bavarian restaurant, and we had some nice pork hocks and
kosher
pork and other good things, but it was really great food. And now we're going to let some people talk to you who you haven't heard from for a long time. And number one will be your cousin Anthony, who will have a few words to say.
Hi, Barry. How are you? What's this? Right now, I've been doing reading a couple sci-fi books. Have you ever heard of Frank Herbert, Under Pressure? And there's another one. What's this name here? Heinlein. Right now, I'm playing Kazo. Everything's falling over on the floor. I just want to say hello, and I'll see you soon, I hope. Okay? Bye-bye.
This is a great week because we're going to celebrate Flora and Bob's second wedding anniversary. And we're all sort of breathing a sigh of relief, and apparently it took. And to vouch for that, I now give you Flora Putnam, who came over vicariously on the Mayflower.
Hi, Barry. I can't stand talking to tape recorder, but your dear old dad said you'd enjoy hearing what I'm doing out in Los Angeles, so I'll tell you, I love it. Really, now I think what's important about there is not Los Angeles, but the place where we're living. We're living in married student housing apartments. We have a community of kids our age, really warm, wonderful bunch of friends, and we really feel a part of it, and we're really enjoying it. School is tremendous for me. I really feel like I'm learning a lot, although I can't wait to get out. I keep saying only 3 more years and I'll never go to school again. The school that I'm going to, I guess you know, is professional psych school. And I'm getting a lot of field experience, which is really exciting for me. I'm getting supervised in it, of course. Last year I worked at a free clinic, and next year I'll work mostly family therapy and diversion program with kids who are being forced to come, which should be challenging. I just ran out of ideas. Oh, exciting thing is, does he know about Argentina?
No.
Bob and I might be going to Argentina for a year, but we have absolutely no idea what our chances are. Bob is working on a frog that refuses to dehydrate itself. He'll have to tell you more about it. But anyway, he wants to go down to Argentina and study it. And he's written for a grant off of somebody else's grant, and if it comes through both ways, then we'll be going down there to this dumpy little town out in the middle of nowhere. And Bob corrects me. He says it's 100,000 people. Mendoza. Right, but it's clear across from Buenos Aires. It's pretty far. What? Oh, my father wants me to something happened. I thought something just happened. My father wants me to tell you that he overthrew the Greek government because he just happened to be there in Greece when the junta gave up. Anyway, back to the frogs. I guess Bob can tell you about it. He was so interested in your gel and everything. Here's a typical day at the York Harris household.
There any orders for the bakery?
Well,
I'm going to
get David some cookies.
Donuts. I have David.
No sweets.
I have David. Take the calories out.
I have David. 3 dozen rye bread. 4 gross of donuts.
I have David. Cookies for David and brownies.
I'm sorry, David. In various absence, I'm eating kosher, and I will not allow any of that stuff here.
take it away.
I'm not going to buy anything.
Okay, now that that's resolved, we've got 2 minutes of uninterrupted peace until the next crisis comes along.
Please.
Nose wants us. You tell her. She's your
story.
Sister.
I don't know the story.
This is Hedda Hopper with the local Hollywood gossip now. Milt just wanted us to tell you a little bit of what's going on with your sister. First, let me tell you, his sister, right, not your sister. Your sister's great. Actually, his nephews are great, too. We really enjoy Larry and David. But Norma's been giving us a pain in the neck. Bob said a pain in the ass. She's just up to her old tricks, and it's getting a little tiresome. She's been pretty good to Bob and me.
Tell her you're tired of hearing about how Barry's a bag of
bones. Oh, yeah, she still tells us what a bag of bones you are. She's amazed. She's amazed that you're getting a paunch. Right. She was very amazed. Microphone cramps my style, so I'll say goodbye. Judy wants to talk to you, but I'll talk to you again later sometime when I'm getting wound up.
We got here. This is Judy. We got here Tuesday, and it's Thursday, and we've done a real lot since. I went water skiing, and I actually got up, and I went around in a circle and around the bay. And then I fell when Daddy smiled at me, but I got back up, and I really like it now. And today, this morning, Peter and Bob went scuba diving in the about halfway between Turtle Island and this other island, looking for the rudder that they dropped off the sailboat. And it was really neat watching them get all dressed up and everything. And I thought of you when you're scuba diving. I haven't really gotten a chance to listen to tape numbers 5 and 6 totally, but I will soon, and I'll tell you about camp and everything later. And Peter wants to talk to you now.
Oh, I just wanted to see if it was on, because it wasn't on before. But to explain what Judy was saying about the rudder, this is Peter. In case you didn't figure it out, I figured you already figured it out, but knowing your mother, you know she wanted me to make sure that you knew. to explain what Judy was saying with the rudder, Yorba and I went out sailing the other day. I guess it was Saturday or something like that. It was pretty windy. We went out in the big boat, you know, the 16-footer. And Yorba insists I was a little slow, and I insist he really blew it, but no matter what happened, we turned over in the boat. And Yorgo had plastic over there because he isn't supposed to get it wet because he just had an operation to get one of his tubes out because it had gotten caught. So he's sitting here struggling in the water trying not to get his ear wet, and we're trying to tip the boat over. And finally, Coast and Anthony, in their usual speed and efficiency, about 20 minutes later, came out into the boat. came out into the boat to help us. You know, it took them a long time because they were struggling. So we finally, you know, got the boat over, and then it tipped over again. So Yoga decided to hand them the rudder. And he took it off and was grabbing it and was lifting it up when he discovered he had the boom in his hand and not the rudder, and that the rudder had sunk to the bottom. So in our quick-mindedness, we marked the spot in our minds where we had tipped over and lost the rudder, only to go back the next day or the day after, whichever, and discover we had no idea where in the hell we had been and where we had dropped the rudder. We were sure within about 150-foot radius that it was somewhere around there. So Anthony and I went out to try yesterday, but it was kind of hard. You know, Anthony, who hasn't done it very much, and it's a lot of weeds. It was about 10 feet deep, the water, and about 8 feet of weeds. So we had a pretty hard time. But it was then Bob and I went today and had a really hard time and had a lot of fun, you know, digging through the weeds. You know, we'd sort of go along, we'd get lost and look at each other, and we'd try to find each other, and then I'd see Bob there all covered with weeds, and he'd tear the weeds and tear my mask off and then discover it was me and not a bunch of weeds. it was pretty interesting. Judy was, you know, she told you she finally got up water skiing yesterday, which was pretty funny because, you know, we were in the water, and Anthony, when she first got up, there was just Anthony driving the boat, and I was helping her in the water.
And can you imagine Iona at shore with her eyes searching the water the first time Judy fell, and just Anthony was there, and she goes, "I can't see her, I can't see her." And we tried to explain to her that only her head and probably half her torso was above water, and it was very difficult seeing her considering she was out near the red buoy. But Iona was not to be comforted. Anthony wants to say something.
You know, it's all Peter's fault because we were planning on going water skiing that the wire broke. I was taking him around and just come boom, and we stopped the boat immediately. And now we can't go water skiing. But tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah, well, I was going out yesterday and had a lot of fun, was doing it, and all of a sudden the wire broke on me. And so we're going to try to get it fixed today and go water skiing later on. By the way, I hope you got like the last tape that we sent. At least I don't know if they sent it once since then. Good, because I had a lot of fun talking about that. It was really funny, you know. You should have been there in the restaurant. And also now that we're all here together too. David's expected tonight, I guess, something like that. I'm supposed to pick him up in Toronto. He's flying into Montreal, and we're hoping he's going to get here. And it's kind of too bad that they have to leave on Sunday. But, well, anyway, I'll try to write you a letter pretty soon. I was meaning to get your address when I left Chicago, but I didn't, so I'll probably get it now. And only one thing I wanted to know, you wanted to know what I was doing in Chicago, but I wanted to know what you were doing on the phone when I picked it up at 8:30 in the morning in Chicago on that day, because I was pretty surprised and was very shocked and wanted to know what you were doing on the phone there. But anyway, I hope you've gotten the explanation of what I was doing there. And now maybe you can explain to me, you know. I mean, if you're going to call it a decent hour next time, you know, have some consideration. So I think Milt's getting itchy because he's sort of, he's shaking his head no, but he wants to talk to you now, I think.
No, I'm just sort of the announcer here, and the next person from whom you will hear will be one Bob Putnam, Boy Frogman.
Oh, I gotta get up. Boy.
No, we'll be.
Oh, here we go. Hi, Barry. As I've already been identified, I'll give you two big clues so that you can be definitely sure who is speaking to you right now. The first big clue is that it's a fellow Ivy Leaguer from a very, very distinguished Ivy League school, I might add. And the second big clue is I was the only one here who understood everything that you spoke about in terms of your scientific endeavors. And if you can't guess it after that, then you're really in trouble. First, I should speak to the point of all those great scientific discoveries of which you spoke so eloquently, I might add, so that even I could understand. I will be scanning the scientific literature day and night from now that I know that you're hard at work on several important discoveries, expecting eminent breakthroughs in both cancer research and immunological basic research. But quite seriously, I am glad that you're enjoying the scientific research, as I found it a colossal drag doing the exact same things you were doing. Oh, yes, as a point of reference, a footnote to this discourse, that's all in reference to tape 3. If you have a exact copy there, you can go back and check out what you said. Yes, that was on Sunday, July 7th,
and Tuesday,
July 9th, and you were talking in reference to David showing up. That was when you were having French fries for dinner here. We'll just play that tape back here so you can figure out what's going on. Now, actually, I think that all sounds quite interesting, what you're doing, particularly the physical education aspects. That certainly drives home several salient points that we could all undertake right here as we're all getting ready to go out jogging. Just from the pure inspiration of it all. And to elaborate a little bit more on some of the more significant features of our life in Los Angeles, and particularly the Argentina thing, what's happening is I've turned traitor and gone away from the Ivy League route of studying whole cells and parts of whole cells and parts of whole nuclei and parts of whole DNA, and have decided to study whole organisms, which, of course, is a grave heresy from the Eastern intellectual aspect of science. And therefore, these various studies of which I am undertaking take me to Argentina, where rare, strange, and hideous types of frogs are found. And with a little bit of luck, I'll be down there studying some of the most strangest, the most hideous of all frogs found in modern science today. Oh, yeah, the common toad of Argentina, which isn't so common. Anyway, I'm putting in with a grant with a couple other people from the University of California system, and hopefully I'll be down there studying temperature regulation in these same various hideous fogs of which I previously mentioned. And it could last for as long as a year, and I would more or less be in charge of my own program down there, which would be very exciting. And if these frogs prove as interesting as they have, as initial observations have shown them to be, then I could also be making significant contributions to a very insignificant field of comparative physiology, which would, of course, be of great interest to people who are interested in frogs. So that all in all, I could be setting myself up for a very distinguished career of which no one will have ever heard about. However, I try not to get too discouraged about such things and muddle on through a possibly meaningless education. Okay, we have, I've pricked the interest of Uncle Milt for one, and he wants to know why these curious frogs in South America are curious and worth studying from a non-medical aspect. So that, well, the interesting thing about these frogs, and if you ever get to South Africa, you could use this reference because there's a very similar frog in South Africa. The interesting thing is, of course, knowing anything about frogs, you know that frogs have high evaporative water loss, which means that they lose water very rapidly from their skins, which, of course, is one main distinguishing feature from frogs from reptiles. However, there have been frogs found in South America, for one, Argentina in particular, and, of course, the South African variety, which have very low evaporative water loss and, in fact, are very similar to reptiles in basic physiological parameters. Therefore, my clever idea was to go to Argentina and study these frogs not just from water loss, but in terms of their temperature regulation and see if, in fact, they get very hot like a number of reptiles and like our very own bodies are very warm. So the basic study will be to go down and study the effect of temperature on these frogs. And it could prove very interesting, and it could prove to change a lot of the views on temperature regulation in amphibians. Could also prove to be a year away from graduate school, in which I'm getting valuable experience learning very dull things. And you know, as all research, there's an element of chance involved, and it, you know, I'm looking at it philosophically now that the worst it could be would be a year away from graduate school, in which I could sort of firm up my ideas and get a lot of experience that I don't feel I've had. Some reflections along those lines might be in order now in terms of graduate school. And my first year of bucking the graduate school system. I found myself having a very difficult time adjusting to graduate school because of various holes in my education at Brown and through various faulty decisions on my part and faulty aspects of my counseling. And I found myself coming into a school which was primarily composed of 30-year-old people with master's degree and 4 years of research experience. And it was very difficult, and I had a very difficult time adjusting at first. The other major problem was everybody seemed to shift emphasis once you got to graduate school from getting good grades and doing well to doing whatever the hell you wanted to do and basing it all on your previous knowledge, which for me was quite a shift in emphasis. So I spent the first year mainly taking courses, gathering together as much knowledge and understanding as I could possibly gather, and spending the summer clarifying some of my interests and ideas for research. And as things stand now, on a majority of fronts, I'm very encouraged, and things are looking up greatly for me. In particular, I'm much closer to getting a permanent sponsor, which is tantamount to being in the department at UCLA. And I also have several ideas for research which could keep me going for years and years and years. And now it's just a matter of narrowing them down and focusing on one particular question to do a dissertation. But I feel it's very valuable having a number of ideas for research so that even once my dissertation is done, I'll have many things to do. So those sorts of things are looking very bright. And as Flora touched on, things in Los Angeles couldn't possibly be better. It's just, I've fallen in love with Southern California. The weather is just fantastic. The people are some of the most friendly and some of the most nifty people I've ever met. and there's always something going on. There's just a lot of really nifty places in Los Angeles to let down and to enjoy. And just all in all, it's a really fantastic place. Coupling that with the fact that most of my chances for a teaching position will be in the California area, things are 50-50 now, depending on the day you're talking about, that we may stay in Los Angeles for a semi-extended period of time, depending on how much of our family drifts out there and what chances we will have to see the parents and things like that. So we're torn now between staying on a permanent basis and coming back and being near the family. I am torn between staying out there. Flora's torn between coming back and remaining married to me. However, we feel that unlike the typical Yerkeres course of action, we will wait and see what happens instead of worrying and panicking about it for several more years. Let's see if this thing's still working.
Yeah, don't worry.
Oh, okay. Let's see what more I could expand on in relation to those sorts of things. That, of course, as always, and as I'm sure you've been acutely aware of, it's always tough being away from family and friends and a lot of the nice things that you get very used to and can even take for granted sometimes. Yes, we have Aunt Norma there. Gosh, what a consolation prize. Yes, yes, that would be one good reason for leaving Los Angeles. However, this vacation, as all vacations, is really fantastic for us. We got a chance to see my parents and see Carol and Dave, who I'm sure you probably remember from the wedding and from the party. And there are two little girls who are our nieces. Yes, indeed, they're our nieces. And, of course, getting up to the cottage and having all the family around, particularly Milt and Iona. And it's very nice all being together. And with David coming tonight, it'll even more sort of point out to us how much we'll miss you, because... Yeah, right. Well, we'll get to that later. But it will really be... We will really miss you up here. And, of course, it's tough for Flora and I when we hear about all these fantastic get-togethers in Boston, with thinking back to Christmas time and how much fun we had with you and Yorgo and Peter Penny and everybody together. And it's really just too bad that we were in Providence 4 years before all you guys got there. However, we do have a plan to keep our spirits up tonight. And when David arrives, Peter and I decided to stage an instant replay of my arrival not 2 or 3 years ago. I guess it was 3 years ago. And run out and bite his arm and dance around like a bunch of faggots. And, you know, the typical... the typical joke line with this family. You've gotten the complete rundown on our Lloyd Bridges routine this morning, which was a real thrill. And, of course, the day before we got here, they broke the ski rope for the 56th time, so we are sitting here waiting for Vicky and Costa to get back from town with a new ski rope. The swimming is beautiful, the water's beautiful, the weather's beautiful, the insects are gone. So it's really fantastic being up at the cottage. Well, I rambled on for hours and hours here. I'm going to turn this over to Iona. It was very great hearing what little bit we heard of your exploits, and we will all be listening very closely to the rest of your tapes. And I don't have in my very mind what time when you're getting back in terms of this year, but I hope that we can get together soon after you're getting back, and perhaps this time you'll travel westward after the family has had their full of your being home and see our Los Angeles area, which we love to show to any and all comers.
The next voice you will hear is that of your very loving mother.
Hi, dear. Well, now when you hear Iona's lost her rudder, that's not me. That's the sailboat. When we arrived at the cottage the other day, everybody was down at the beach, and we walked in, took a good look around this incredibly clean, tidy cottage, and for a moment, we thought we were in the wrong place, because missing from in front of the green couch was the mosaic tile coffee table that has consumed 10 summers of Costa's valuable time repairing. At any rate, after we looked around and around and around and then moved all our stuff down to the downstairs cottage, we felt much more at home because there is that coffee table established in its new home down below. As you well know by now, we're all here, and today's really a great day. D-Day, as Daddy called it. I can't help remembering your tape on the day that you were waiting for David to arrive in Israel, and we are feeling much the same way and looking at the clock and trying to figure where he is. And right now, he's probably several hours outside of Montreal, and we're eagerly waiting his phone call, and then by the time he gets himself into Montreal, presumably into Toronto, we should have time to drive up there to pick him up. The last week before we left home was very pleasant. As you know, on the 15th of August, Bubby celebrated her 75th birthday. Incredible. You can say a Shechianu for that. At any rate, it was a strange kind of celebration. Miriam Lohenberg had been in the hospital, and she's incidentally fine now. They thought that she had had a coronary, but she seems to be fine. We sort of were unable to get together with Mesh and Elaine because Mesh was out of town that week and at that time, and Daddy had been sick a couple days and was sort of swamped with work. At any rate, I decided to have my own little celebration with them on the Thursday night of her birthday. So I invited Aunt Adele and Uncle Aaron along, thinking that they would like that. And we decided to have a dinner at that new North Shore Hilton in Skokie. And then when I thought about it, I realized that it's very close to Reese and Leo's house. So I decided to surprise the four of them and invite Reese and Leo along. So we had a little family dinner, and it was very, very lovely. The next night, Mesh and Elaine took Bubby out in Zadie, and they went to a sort of Serbian-type place, which I guess played some Russian music, and had a little atmosphere of that sort. No food that Bubby could eat, but a lot of atmosphere. And they enjoyed that. And then, I guess, on Sunday, they took advantage of the Golden Age birthday present free passes to the Lincoln Village Theater and got to see a movie, also celebrating Bubby's birthday, so she had kind of her own style marathon, and it was very, very nice, and we're just all delighted. When I left them, they were really in quite good spirits. I'm sure you got the last tape. I'm still overwhelmed with Zadie coming up with that Russian poem after all those years, and it's really just great to hear them that way. I want to sign off now because everybody's busy with their various activities over here, and I'm sure we'll tune in again as soon as we get Davidel home with us. Incidentally, in addition to David's arrival today, I myself am thinking over and over again that I hope Stuart did indeed leave today, Yisrael. And my heart is very full for the Shlenskys with his arrival at home. If all goes well in the very near future, he should be home for a nice long rest. And it means a great deal to all of us to have him there. By now you also are reunited with all of your friends. I know that Bonnie is there. And Judy, and I suppose Matt, I don't really know for sure, but I suspect all the others are arriving. I called Rosen's Tuesday morning before I left for Canada to find out when Barry was going to come home, and he answered the telephone. So I said, Barry, when are you coming home? And he said, I'm coming home yesterday. So anyway, they're all just fine, and although I haven't seen him yet, we'll see him when we get back to Chicago. Judy and Carol and I will stay at the cottage until this coming Tuesday. Daddy and David are going home Sunday night. David has to register Monday morning, and we'll have a few extra days at home before school starts. But we're going to take a couple more days up here. And then when we get back with Carol, we have some theater tickets. We have the Academy Theater up in Lake Forest, and oddly enough, the Ravinia play, which appears, as you know, at the end of each season, is the Old Vic. So here is Carol coming from London to see the Old Vic in our backyard at Ravinia. The play is As You Like It, Shakespeare, of course. And Sunday of her visit with us, we have a date to meet Irv and Vivian at the University of Chicago for their court theater, which is very lovely. And so she will have an opportunity to see things, how things are done at a real university. I think it's a coincidence that we happen to be going to Southside that night with Viv and Irv, and I think Carol will enjoy that a great deal. And also Labor Day weekend is going to be interspersed with gatherings at the Cantors, and we were invited to the Chapmans, and I'm hoping she will stay through the weekend so that we can introduce her to all kinds of people. I guess that's it for the moment, honey. We will tune in again shortly, and I hope you're studying hard and learning a little Hebrew. It's about time you made something out of yourself instead of bumming around all the time. And I love you. Bye-bye, dear.
Well, Yorgo's going to have to move his rear end. And in fact, he just did it. He fell off the couch. He's crawling on the floor, coming closer and closer to the microphone. And I think he may have a few bone notes for you. Take it away. Bone notes? Oh, he got no notes for you. He got mo's for you. Take it away, Yorgo Yerkarth.
I made it. At last. I made it.
Did you make it, Barry?
A kilometer of water every day, that's pretty good. Must be feeling very good about that.
We water ski a kilometer every day.
Yeah, Bob says he water skis a kilometer every day. Bob's big and healthy now. Married life does wonders for the body, let me tell you. I'm glad to hear that everything is going so well for you in Israel. Things in Buffalo and next year in Providence look very interesting for me. I'm looking forward to moving to Providence. We found a really nice apartment in Providence in an old mansion, and our landlord's the ambassador from Uruguay. Not Uruguay, no. From Panama, I believe. And it's right on Benefit Street in the heart of the city. Downtown is a block away. Rhode Island School of Design is a block away. Brown University is two blocks away. So it should be a really delightful location. Hopefully I can find a job that merits my talents next year. Job market's very difficult. I'm looking forward to finding something that I can pursue in the computer field and in systems analysis, which I hope will be a future interest of mine and that I can enjoy as a profession. But the job market, it seems to be pretty poor now, and I'm just crossing my fingers to get a good job. But when you come in to East next year sometime, we'll be in Providence, so you must look us up. We'll be at 281 Benefit Street in Providence. So you know our address now. You can give us a ring or write us a letter when you're coming, because I really would like to see you. And it's sort of not really complete up to the cottage with the Levenfelds without Barry Levenfeld. It's sort of an incomplete Levenfeld family. Because I really miss doing things with you very much, especially sailing. Because you more than anyone else was a true sailing partner with me. Now for the lighter side of things, we'll slip into some other things. Other things to wear and other things to unwear. But today is sort of a nice lazy day. The sun is out again. And we'll be playing a couple of discs in the background for some good, wholesome music from the Eric Harris Abode, a Sari game, a Monopoly game, a collector's game. Any type of game you want to play, we'll play it, and we'll have it here for you, Barry. Not in Israel, but here for you, Barry. So come and have a game for you. A game for me, a game for us all. Anyways, back to some heavier size of things. Here I am again, and I'm going to introduce a very famous celebrity that we found flying in a great hurry at Buffalo Airport. You all know her. She's a very famous friend of ours, Flora Putnam. Give her a hand.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I'm not Flora. Just a second.
I thought he was introducing Carol.
I just, now that I got a little less tongue-tied, I just wanted to say that we think about you often. Back there in California, Norma and Hal were talking about Israel one day, and I was thinking of you, especially then. We do miss you. We do wish that we were in Boston. That one weekend last fall killed me when we called, and there was everybody else, and I just kept thinking, if I hadn't graduated in 3 years, I would have been there too. But I went on to bigger. I went on to bigger and better.
The boss I bear.
I went on to bigger and better things. So I'm not unhappy with my choice. But I did want you to know again that we really miss you. I love you very much. I really hope you're having a great time. And we'll be hurt if you don't come and make a trip west since you've made a trip east. Bye bye.
That was, as you all know, the infamous voice of Flora Putnam, formerly Flora Yerikaris, informally Flora.
Okay, Bear, now's the time for me to introduce you to a cousin who you've never met but who wants to say hello to you. Her name is Carol Lowenstein, and she hails from South Africa. However, for the last 8 years, she has been in London, and she is a teacher in psychiatric social work. She is the granddaughter, of one of my grandfather's brothers who settled in South Africa, and therefore she is my second cousin. And to you, she's a second cousin once removed. She shall be on as the next voice.
Hello, Barry. I hope to meet you one day. I'm your South African cousin. And I heard that you were interested in South Africa, so I hope that perhaps one day you might come along there and visit. You have lots of relatives there whom I'm sure will be fascinated and interested to meet you. Lots of cousins your own age, a bit younger, a bit older. And apparently there's lots of scientific interest for you there, so I'm sure you'd have a good time. I'm really enjoying meeting my family here. It's all very interesting. They're similar in many ways to the family in South Africa, just as crazy. And it's really good being here. Everybody's very warm and friendly. I'm interested that you're in Israel. I also was there for a year. I probably went on a different premise from you. So my conclusions probably would be a bit different from yours. I'm glad to hear you're enjoying it. And perhaps on your way back home, if you do pass through London, you can phone me up and perhaps we can get together there. You can get all the necessary information from your parents. From here, I'm going to stay at your home in Chicago. And I'm interested in meeting everybody there. And as I said, I'm sorry I can't meet you this time, but I'm sure we will get together now that the contact with your family has been established. So have a good time, enjoy the rest of your stay, and bye-bye.
It's now approximately 24 hours since we last recorded. In that time, we picked up David at the airport after he had been traveling some 24 hours and claims he hadn't slept for 40 hours or something like that because of the fact that he had only 1 hour of sleep the night before he left. There was someone he had to say goodbye to. This morning, things started off in a normal fashion. David led it off with some water streaking. And apparently it was a first for the Georgian Bay, or at least this part of the Georgian Bay, as David went bare-ass out to the western sun, followed by Peter and by Bob. And it caused quite a consternation because we had a 13-year-old girl here who should not have been seeing these things. Now, there's a young man by the name of Yorgo, wants to say something to you. Just one moment.
This is Yorgo at ringside here down at the waterfront, and here we have our famous water streakers locally around me. Mr. Levenfeld, I think, has stepped down for the moment now, but we're going to talk to the number two water streaker and ask him how the things were water streaking this morning. Peter, you're a carousel. How was your water streak this morning?
It was okay. I was a little tight on the ass there a while. You know, you get in the wake, and it's pretty good, but you turn out and you try to sit down on your skis, and it's like a knife in there. You know, there's no way to get around it.
Do you think water streaking is more confining or more difficult than the plain old water skiing?
Well, when you first get under, you're a little cautious because you don't want to fall. You know, it could result in some serious redness in certain areas. But besides that, afterwards, you're just a little conscious of it. And, you know, you tend to split your legs a little more when you're skiing on the straightaways. It's more interesting. It's more fun.
Well, that was the report from the number two water streaker. And over here we have, he thinks, feels that water streaking, even though it may be more dangerous, is more delightful for the splitting of the legs. Just a second here, and we'll speak to our number two, three water streaker, Robert Putnam, who is our first water streaker to slalom on one ski. Take it away, Robert.
I just have to say, Les, that I was very disappointed with the turnout this morning. We had a very, very small crowd for such a momentous occasion, and we must admit there was quite a bit of grief from some of the members of the crowd, which we felt was rather in bad sportsmanlike conduct. But, however, it was thrilling for those of us who did participate, and we hope that perhaps those of you out there in TV land might be able to join us someday in such a momentous occasion.
Did you feel the oohs and ahs from the audience were insufficient to continue your water streaking habits in the future?
Well, I would say that we like to be undaunted in these types of endeavors, so I hope that maybe someday we can come back and have a repeat performance with full appreciation. Yes, as soon as the long arm of the law here will relent a bit, we might be able to get out from under.
There it was from Robert Putnam, our first slalom water streaker, and he feels that even though he had an enjoyable time, that the audience was insufficient to continue further streaking at the moment. Back to Milton Levenfeld, and later we'll have an interview with our first water streaker, David Levenfeld.
Well, Bob was mentioning the long arm of the law, and that's me. And I'm going to enforce the rule of law in water skiing. And the rule of law is that there shall be no nudity. Now this rule of law has been laid down by one Iona Levenfeld to protect the innocents. And sweetness of her lovely 13-year-old daughter, who during all this had to avert her eyes and therefore could not see the water all morning. And we do not want to keep Judy from seeing the water and other nice things. Consequently, it is now the rule in the Arakaris cottage that when Judy's at the beach, everybody has their pants on. It was the rule before this that they weren't to go water streaking because of the neighbors, but this morning we adopted a neighbor be damned attitude. Bob is
neighbors over on the rocks, of which there were two when before we started the festivities, increased to three, and there were even reports of four neighbors out pouring on the rocks cheering us on. So.
In fact, there was some thought toward the middle of it to charge admission, but that was soon voted down because we didn't want to bring this into crass commercialism. It was merely to give one a chance to have a little bit of freedom in the crotch area that this whole thing came about. Now, it's been raining. You wouldn't believe it, but in Ontario it rains. And David went downstairs, but David is now, I think, ready to report. I'm going to give you the announcer for this event so that he can bring you David Levenfeld.
Here we are back at Waterside, and our famous water streaker, the first man to have the guts to drop his pants on the skis, David Levenfeld, will have a few words to tell you about the novel and interesting event. We will check our record books. This Georgian Bay record might be the first one in history. David Levenfeld, the record breaker. Take it away, David.
Man, does my scrotum hurt.
Why is that, David? Explain further.
Well, let me talk. Let me go into this. It all started off pretty well. I went around a couple of times on two skis and out into the channel and everything. And being the pioneer and everything, I felt that that was enough. But then my cousin Peter thought that he was equally cool. So he took it on in back to the cottage, going the same amount as me. So I figured that I should try slaloming. So I'll try to slalom for the first time.
Let me interrupt you right now. You know that you were not the first slalom streaker. How do you feel about that, David, after being the first water streaker?
Well, I thought I'd let my cousin-in-law, Robert, try it out. But I was the first one to do it and to also successfully fall, therefore putting my scrotum in its present condition of being red and very irritated.
So you think that water streaking, especially slalom streaking, is bad for the scrotum?
I wouldn't say that. It could be rough on the scrotum if you fall, but generally it gives your gonads quite a good feeling.
The floppy air about the gonads is comfortable, you say?
Yes, just as comfortable as sleeping in a double bed with my cousin Peter.
Thank you very much, David Levenfeld. Here is Yorgo Yerikaris at Waterside saying good day and may God bless.
Now, in the midst of all this levity, we are preparing to play a bridge game. And Costa is stuck in the kitchen. He's going to make us such delicacies as uvalaki, corn, some string bean mess, which Iona is going to learn how to cook, and I'm going to have to eat from now on. And altogether, we're preparing for a feast. But we want you to hear from your Aunt Nikki first. We'll get your Uncle Costa shortly because we don't want to interrupt his cooking. Our lives depend upon a good meal for tonight. So take it away, Aunt Nikki.
Hi, Barry. How are you? We miss you very much and wish you were here with all the rest of us. It's very hassling having so many young men who are out to do their own thing, but I expect we'll survive it all. It's really, your loss is really felt here.
We'll pretend he isn't, though.
That's not what I am saying. I meant his not being here.
I just don't want him to feel bad. That's
everybody's afraid you
yeah,
think...
Yeah, we don't really miss him.
Everybody's afraid you'll... I think that you're dead. I wasn't suggesting that. We are looking forward to a meeting with you and your family in Boston after you come back, since... we've missed you this time so much. Okay, for now. Goodbye.
Hold on, Bear. I'm about to move the recording device into the kitchen where Nikki has kept Costa tied for the last 3 weeks, and the pressure cooker is cooking and stuff like that, and it's going to be a rare visit to Costa, who really none of us have seen as yet because he has not come out of the kitchen. Okay, now we have it set up in the kitchen, and we have a special announcer to introduce Mr. Constantine Yerikaris.
Hello, Barry. In line with having people who understand the sport give a blow-by-blow description as to what's occurring, I have moved along into the kitchen to help you share some sights and sounds and especially smells that Uncle Costa is producing for us. He's standing in the kitchen in his bathing trunks with his white hair flying, and he is orchestrating a meal for us which will be memorable. You may hear a strange hissing sound in the background. That is the pressure cooker placed on, now let me see, jiggle, jiggle, 15 pounds pressure. And inside that pressure cooker, fresh string beans garnered from the local farmer, which had been cut in a particular way. Both ends off, but not too much. You don't want to waste anything. And then you carefully run the knife edge perpendicular to the crease, but not all the way down into the bottom, acquiring what is generally known in the trade as a Frenched string bean. Imagine a whole pressure cooker full of these. Chopped onion covering. Canned tomatoes. Excuse me, Barry, tomatoes. Canned tomato paste.
You know what
garlic. Garlic. MSG. Little leftover zucchini. Salt. And olive oil. And this concoction is being prepared for us tonight. Along with Uvalaki soup and certain other delicacies. Now, the chef is at this moment slicing an onion, but he agrees to speak to his darling nephew on those far Mediterranean shores. Here he comes.
Hello, Barry. It's so nice to hear your voice and the extolling of all your experiences in the East, I should say Middle East, in Israel. It's wonderful, really moving, your experiences, as well as the way you are able to communicate to and make it possible for us to share it with you. Good show. There is very little really to say about here that has not already been said. One thing that I must reiterate is that I also share with everybody here that you're not here with us, and we don't. You're not with us to share the things that we are having here. Anyway, keep it up, and I hope very soon, in the very near future, to be able to see and embrace you. For now, hail to thee, and the best of luck.
Hi, Bear, it's me. I'm in Nikki's and Costa's room right now, and it's the same day, Friday the... I lost check. I guess the 23rd. And Nikki and Anthony and Danny and Yorgo are playing bridge. Costa's cooking. Laura and Bob are talking. David and Peter are writing various letters and things like that. And it's the perfect opportunity for me to talk to you. As I look out the window, I see a very choppy bay. And it's raining and the rocks look really cool. It's kind of dismal outside. It's been a lot of fun up here. We've been here a couple days already. It was just so good to see David. I was so happy when I saw him. And, God, it just started to hail like. Ooh, hold on. Ooh, a gusty wind and hail here in Canada. The trees are blowing and the cottage is swaying. Ooh. Okay, hello. I just want to tell you about camp and everything because I never got to talk to you about it other than that time. I passed Junior Life Saving. I'll tell you what happened. The last Saturday of camp, last Shabbat, we had a lot to do yet, and we were leaving. We had to finish everything by Sunday. So, Saturday we got up at 8 and swam from 8 to 10. And it was kind of, you know, it was rescues and drilling us and everything and swimming a couple laps. And then we ate breakfast. And then, you know, we did our morning activities and our chugim. And then after lunch, we had an hour of junior life saving again with the drilling and preparing us for the written test and everything. And then from 3 to 4, we swam across the lake. It was really fun. I mean, because I do the breaststroke my own way, and I can just go on pretty much forever. I do it a real lot. The banging you hear in the background, I guess the shutters falling and things. It's really getting windy. Anyways, so I swam across the lake with not much trouble, which was very relieving, and it was part of our test. It was about a mile or a little less, and it was a good accomplishment. And then after that, to top off my wonderful junior life saving day, I entered a swim meet. And I was on the Cotrine relay team, and we just didn't win. I mean, it was really bad. The Bonin killed us. And, like, the last thing was freestyle, which I did, and by the time it was my turn to go, the whole Bonin relay team finished.
so it was really not much fun at all. But I'd say that day I swam like 5 hours. It's a real long time for me. And that's not for you since you're the professional swimmer who does a kilometer a day. Anyways, then Sunday, during middle class for an hour, we took the written test, and then came the hard stuff. Sunday, starting at 3, ending at 5:30. Two senior lifesavers, and I'd say 25 junior lifesavers all got their skill tests in the water. Aaron Kaiser, who was the big guy, was one of the victims that we worked with. So was Abby Sloan, a Madracha, again, Sherry Silberg, a Madracha. And one of the senior lifesavers passed, and all but one junior lifesaver passed, which was kind of heartbreaking for this little kid named Tevi, who was in younger Kochim, a year younger than I am, but he's really super short, and he's very coordinated and a super fast swimmer for his size. Very coordinated kid, but he was super, super, super disappointed. He was crying. He just walked out when he found out he didn't make it. I felt really bad for him. Anyway, so we did the skill test, which there are 8 different approaches and rescues. And so we'd come up to our victim as soon as they said go and do the approach. And they would struggle, and they would react as a normal victim would react. And then they'd score us, like, you know, and if you did it really well, you'd get a 5. And if you did it lousy, you'd get a 2. And the object was to either get 5s on all of them or get a total of 30 points. You had to get 30 to pass. Which meant that, you know, if you blow it a real lot, your scores, the points, will not total up to 30 and you won't pass. So, in the middle of the skill test, I casually asked the person who corrected the written test if I had passed, and they said I did, which gave me a lot of motivation. And on every skill test rescue except one, I got a 5, and that one I got a 3 on, and that was with a big guy who went spazzo because I did something wrong, and he started ducking and sinking, and I had a hair pull him, and I just couldn't handle it, and so he gave me a 3. So I got 38 out of 40. Oh my God, hold on. The water is seeping through the window here in Nikki's and Costa's room. Hold on, I'm going to go tell him. Hold on. Okay. The drippings from the window are all wiped up, and everything's fine now. They closed all the shutters, and right now I'm in the room where the boys used to sleep at the big cottage, you know, right across from the living room with the big white door. And I sleep in here with Kira Lowenstein, who is our cousin from South Africa, who lives in England now, who's really, really nice. And getting back to the junior life saving, I forgot about that. Anyways, oh no, I passed. And Nancy Lerner passed with flying colors. She got 40 out of 40. Randy passed her swimmer's test. Julie Combe passed her swimmer's test. And the swimming program was really good. About our project on Israel, Randy and I didn't get to finish it, but we'll be working on it during the year. And I'll keep you up to date on what my Hebrew school courses are going to be. I'm not sure yet. It's kind of complicated, but registration soon, so I'll figure it out and tell you about it. I'm sorry I haven't written lately, but I've been busy. In between Monday when I got home from camp at 1 o'clock and Tuesday when we left for Canada at 11 o'clock, I had so much to do, I didn't know which end was up. All my friends were coming over to say hi and everything, and I was packing and unpacking and washing clothes, and it was really hectic. It's wonderful up here. I love water skiing. Oh, you heard about the water streaking. Yes, Mommy's innocent eyes couldn't handle it, and I got the repercussions. I was in such a difficult position because I remember going, hey, Judy. And Mom would go, no, don't look. And, I mean, it was just a weird, weird position to be in. But I handled it. You know what I did? I came up here and went to sleep. And then everyone came up later. We're having new Wallachie soup tonight, which is not my cup of tea, but everyone else is excited about it. Saturday night we're having a half a lamb, which we're not going to do on the spit, I don't think, because it's not big enough. And I don't know, it's been really good. School starts in a couple weeks. David's doing his scheduling. It's really good to see him. He got me a really pretty shirt in the Arab market. I love it. It's really neat. It's kind of like the one I have, you know, the blue one. Only it's, oh, it's so pretty. And what else? If there's anything you want me to tell you or anything, you should tell us.
Well, Bruce is absolutely beautiful, gorgeous. Oh, we were so excited to see each other. And we were talking and everything. He talks. I mean, like, I go, hey, Judy, want a hot dog? Want a hot dog? And I go, don't cry. Does it hurt? Does it hurt? He's really cute about everything. All right. Let me see. At camp, we did the drama thing. If I told you about it, then me, nobody knows, which is really good. I just had a really spectacular year at camp, and I miss everyone a lot. And I hope I'll be making a Midwest tour, Detroit, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. It's kind of doubtful, but maybe I can to see everybody. I made real good friends with a girl from Cleveland named Anne, and I hope I'll get to see her. And I was good friends with Julie and everything. And it's just been a real good summer, and I'm sorry to see it end. And I'll talk to you a couple times more before school starts. I love you. Goodbye.
Right, but that's but the point was then she brought what she didn't like about you into the conversation, which had nothing to do with the price of peanut butter and chocolate.
Oh, can I say one other thing? If you heard me tell you about the night show, and if you're reasonable, ask me if I'm teasing you.
Yeah, I should have. I just thought it's true that you want to get the wash out.
No one else bid, did they? Here. Did you bid for
him? Yes, they did. It didn't matter. I ended up wearing my heavy nightgown.
No, this is the matter.
Well,
this is attitude naturally, sort of.
We could probably
start. That was Peter and Bob playing something specially for you in the midst of a bridge game.
Jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Lord, no England's empire has returned into sand. Vanished from my hand, left me blind ahead, established in our sleeping. I had no one to meet, and the ancient ancestries too dead for dreaming.
Let me set the
tempo. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there ain't no place I'm going to. I'm going to. Hey, Mr. tambourine man. This song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I come by.
What did you just say with me a lot?
That was Peter, and Flora was trying to sing along with Peter, but she didn't quite get the chords right. She was about three chords behind all the time, but she has an excuse. She has an excuse for it.
I want you to know that Bob's just teaching me how to play the guitar, so you have to bear with me.
This came about because it rained very hard this afternoon, and we have to entertain ourselves, and this is part of the entertainment. David is now fast asleep on the couch. The noise is unabated, but Dave sleeps on because it's 4 o'clock in the morning, Israeli time, and this is his first day. See you soon. It's now 24 hours later. Penny has arrived, and we are all just so thrilled. Some of us have been helping Uncle Costa, but Uncle Costa mainly has been cooking a wonderful anniversary dinner to celebrate the anniversary, 25th no less, of Costa and Nikki and of Iona and Milton. And Flora and Bob have a piddling little 2-year anniversary, but we're going to take cognizance of that. And now Uncle Costa is going to say a few words to the assembled multitude. Uncle Costa is being usurped by his young son, Yorgo, who will now grab a hold of a magnum of champagne.
Spike
with kale pectate, David says. And will deliver a few words.
Under
the dull roar of our crowd back there, two very beautiful couples who happen to be our parents, our aunts and uncles, for their 25th year
count them
together.
I want to add something to
that's not necessarily true. Cool.
I want to add to four of the most beautiful parents I've ever seen either.
Yay.
I like to add to that.
Well, I think we're stretching. What do you mean?
And also, I would like to make another toast to two beautiful brothers and sisters for their second anniversary.
Yay!
And then we have another 50 more.
50 years married.
Hello, Barry. How are you? It's pretty nice being here up at the cottage. Yeah. Pretty relaxing after all that nightlife in Europe and Israel. And sort of weird only having Peter in my bed at night. But last night I had a wet dream, so it's sort of worthwhile sleeping with Peter.
I'm glad he was squirting up instead of out.
No, we want to make a social, but there are too many people to celebrate here.
We want to make a
Did you hear that? All right, I'll lead a toast to Barry. Does anybody here want to make a toast to Barry?
No.
So, Barry, as we see, general opinion does not want to make a toast to you, so just consider that you didn't have it.
It's too hot at the time.
Well, one or two people in the crowd, I don't know who they were, tried to make a toast to you, but didn't really pull off. I'd like to thank you for coming to Goldstein and meeting up with our group so much this summer, because I really enjoyed seeing you in the Merkaz HaOlam. None of the people around the table know what that is. I could be saying Lifrokotach, but I'm not.
Why is this really so heavy?
Are you fucking Lofan like you were starting to do on that Wednesday night? I hope not, because you could really learn a lot of Hebrew there. Tomorrow night I'll be home, and I plan on going and finding out everybody's schedule before I register for school on Monday. Looks like I'll have a pretty good schedule getting out at 2 o'clock, but after 12 o'clock or 12:40, only having lunch and typing. So I'll be pretty much free to take off in the afternoons if I want to, especially considering that I'm a senior, and second semester I'll drop all my courses and quit USY to go out for baseball. Bumper would like to say a few words. The cat will not come back. The cat didn't have anything to say. Penny, our cousin who somehow has blonde hair, would like to say some words to you, Barry.
They do the alcoholic circumstances beyond my control. Oh, this is Howard Cosell's girlfriend talking. Having a wonderful time at the cottage as usual. I have nothing much to report, but I hope you're having a very nice time in Israel.
Unfortunately, we're going to school. Maybe
we'll visit. Oh, school. I'm going to Rhode Island. I was accepted. I think he heard about that.
Yeah, well, everyone has come along.
And I'm very excited about it, and I'm sure we'll see you up at Harvard. We'll make a few trips up there.
If he comes back.
If he comes back,
if
yes.
Don't talk dirty.
I'll try not to.
Oh, cheers.
But I hope you have a very nice time. That's all about it. Have a good
night.
What? Guys, now that the tape recorder is off, let's hear what you really think of Barry.
Oh, good.
Okay, Bob, what do you think of Barry?
I hope he stays in Israel, you know.
I love him.
Explicit and deleted.
Yeah, if Milton hadn't been sitting there.
If Milton hadn't made us to talk on that tape, I never would have done it.
Wow, you know. What a drag.
All right.
If he puts in money, he can't buy everything, Milton.
Okay, now I'm going to turn the tape on and everybody can be nice to Barry. Broadcasting from beautiful downtown Wabash, Ontario. It's Peter Eric Harris is about to sink his teeth into some delicious treif lamb. Peter, how is this treif lamb that Barry Levenfeld would never, ever in his chance, in his life, have a chance to eat?
It's not kosher.
Well, does that sort of take away all the good taste?
No, but it's a psychological barrier.
Barrier?
Barry, as in barrier. I'm more Barry than you are.
I follow.
But what I want to say more than anything, Barry, this is a very humble occasion. David and I have had a good time together, and they're all celebrating their 25th and 2nd anniversary. David and I have our 10th to celebrate. And you know something, Barry?
Just a little bit.
Two words David and I have to say to you.
Hey, guys, we're having a big
class. Just when you're back in old times, we thought we'd give you a little bit of our higher touches of our humor.
Penny, you should have gotten the ribs. They're delicious.
I got ribs.
This lamb is good.
Barry, we were thinking of a good way to break this to you because we know it'll sort of throw off your views on childhood and younger people, but Peter and I drove into Victoria Harbor last night looking for the beloved chicken hawk. And when we were greeted by the townspeople, we were informed that, prepare yourself, chicken hawk is married.
Oh, what pain.
Not only is he married, Barry, but he has a child and another one on the way. And we were sort of disappointed because we were hoping to meet him and to hear the classic, fuck man got dope, but he was down on the beach bawling his wife, so we didn't see him. And we're sort of sad not being able to see him, but at least we saw his little brother and some of the other townspeople like Arnold and the other guys. They related to us a story about one of the guys in their gang. Their car was pushed into the bay a couple nights ago, and they found it and they towed it up. And for $40, they got it towed and fixed up, and it was running. And they called it the submarine. And that's just a little vignette of life in Victoria Harbor. I gotta go fetch me some food.
It's really a joy by looking at the kind of children we've had. Magnificent.
Mom?
Oh,
Mom?
Milk?
Do I have your glass?
Well,
sorry.
Barry, we've been deliberating for a number of hours now. And in ascending order, we've come up with the delicacies, the best delicacies served at this cottage. And they are, in ascending order, rack of lamb, chocolate chip cookies, and Uvaraki soup.